Good afternoon on this surprise sunny Friday here. It's a Juno afternoon, and I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. Today we've got a really fun show ahead. We're going to be finding out all about Minicon, Alaska Robotics Comic Con. We don't even know what to call it. It's become more than a Minicon, I'll tell you that. We're going to be finding out from a bunch of folks about that. We're going to talk with some advisors out at UAS. Katrina Pearson will be here to highlight the upcoming Northwards Symposium. And we're going to have, of course, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, more music. We're going to be listening to some Prince, of course, more. All happening here on a Juno afternoon, right after National Native News.
For National Native News, I'm Stephen Emmons, in for Antonia Gonzalez. Three tribes signed agreements this week with the U.S. Interior Department to conduct land buyback programs. The Yankton Sioux Tribe of South Dakota and two others joined the 31 tribes so far that have entered into the program. The buyback is part of the nearly $2 billion Cobell settlement that aims to consolidate fractional trust or restricted land holdings over 10 years. In a press release, the Interior Department says it's paid out more than $740 million so far to individual landowners, restoring 1.5 million acres of land to tribal hands. The department identifies some 245,000 private landowners who are eligible for the buyback program. A case that strikes at the heart of tribal sovereignty is now in the hands of the U.S. Supreme Court. Justices heard oral arguments this week in the case U.S. v. Bryant. The case involves a man who claims his constitutional rights were violated by a domestic violence conviction handed down in tribal court on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation in Montana, even though he was not represented by a lawyer at the time. The U.S. Court of Appeals in San Francisco ruled in the defendant's favor and threw out the nearly four-year federal prison sentence against Michael Bryant, Jr. Indian Country Today reports justices seemed skeptical of arguments by attorneys representing Bryant's position. A new federal policy could be a boost for tribes and state governments. Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports the change by the Obama administration would pay 100% of Medicaid costs for Native Americans who have been referred to an off-reservation doctor.
Wyoming Department of Health spokeswoman Kim Detai says right now the state pays half the cost of Medicaid for tribes out of its own general fund.
If some certain conditions are met, there may be an opportunity for the federal government to pay 100% of some of the costs rather than for Medicaid clients who access certain services rather than the more traditional 50-50 that we have.
Detai says it's not clear yet how much the state would save, but potentially millions of dollars. Northern Arapaho Councilman Richard Brannon says the change will mostly benefit the state's bottom line and won't necessarily expand services for tribes suffering from high rates of heart disease and diabetes. But it will help tribes in one way, by covering the cost of medically necessary travel. Right now, Brannon says, tribes pay for that.
We live in a very small rural state, and in order to get the necessary special treatment or the specialists, they're typically located in larger metropolitan areas.
Brannon says the policy will mean that the federal government will finally be on the hook to pay for Medicaid for tribes. Brannon says that's required by treaty.
Our ancestry looked at the treaties as sacred, and the issue is IHS is so severely underfunded that they are not meeting their trust responsibilities because of the lack of funding.
Brannon says life expectancy for Native Americans on Wind River Reservation is only 49 years old. He says one major reason is that health services on the reservation is severely underfunded. For National Native News, I'm Melody Edwards in Laramie.
Two U.S. senators introduced legislation this week to help as many as 500,000 Native American students get federal education resources. The bill, sponsored by North Dakota Democrat Heidi Heitkamp and Oklahoma Republican James Langford, aims to update an information the federal government uses to distribute funds to students. The program to distribute funds relies on information compiled by the Bureau of Indian Affairs more than two decades ago. The proposed bill would update the database to close the gap for thousands of Native American students who would otherwise be eligible for funds. For National Native News, I'm Stephen Emmons.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. For 45 years, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You pin a silver star to your chest and you give evil men something to draw down on. Think long and hard before you pick up that badge. The true story of the Birch Brothers, the final western of the last frontier, Monday night, the 25th of April at 7 p.m. on KTOO.
Back to the KTO studios here. Andy Klein, your host for Friday's edition of Juno Afternoon, and I've got good friends and fun people here in the studio with me, which is always really fun. Aaron Searing from Alaska Robotics, Beth Weigel's here, program coordinator for the public libraries, and a friend who I've just met. Welcome. Hi. Katie Shanahan is here, someone who's going to be displaying over at the Comic-Con happening tomorrow. Aaron, let's start with you. This is such an exciting, fun. I sort of can't believe it's the day has come.
I can't believe it either. I've been so excited.
Hearing about this for, I mean, maybe a year, right? Or close to it. You know,
It didn't really become real until probably around December is when we really kind of like, we're going to make this happen.
Yeah, right.
So
and it
really turned around quick.
Yeah.
And it came together, and it's real.
So it's happening.
It's tomorrow.
Right. It is happening. So tell us what's happening tomorrow. It sort of all goes down. The ground zero is sort of the jack, right?
Yeah, so we're having a comic convention, and it will be, the main floor is the jack, and so when people come in, they will get a program, and they can see all the scheduled events, but the floor will be there, so people can go around and see, like, all the different vendors and, like, really cool artists working. We brought a bunch of artists to town for this, and a lot of artists came in just to show at it. And so it's going to be pretty amazing that way. And the whole floor is free because of Friends of Public Library. They sponsored the event, and and so it's no reason not to come.
You're worked up, I can tell.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so
excited. And also there's this other thing.
And this. Yeah, and we've got some amazing guests in town. We're going to have some events, like, all throughout town, but go to there first and get your schedule and figure it out. But yeah, we'll be able to Gold Town. We'll be at the reading room at the Imagination Station, and
basically every free space in town.
At the Zach Gordon, where I have like a hangout drawing stuff with some amazing artists, so you can kind of go like draw with them. It's gonna be great.
And Beth, how did the library get involved?
Well, basically, Pat had contacted us and said, hey, we want to do this mini comic convention, and we want to do one day where we might have like a youth version of it, you know, so the kids can have their own like comic convention at the library, and then we'll have a bigger one at the hall. And I said, yeah, that sounds good. And so we talked about that idea for a while, and it evolved and it morphed and into, you know, now we're having the kickoff for the convention tonight at the Mendenhall Valley Library at 6 p.m.
Yeah, we wanted all the kids involved in the actual con. So we're going to have a lot of kid booths and stuff at the con, too.
Cool.
It's
going
to be great.
So tell me about the event tonight at the library.
Yeah.
Right. So that's also going to have all of the special guest artists there tonight. They're all going to do some sort of a 5-minute on the fly sort of like intro of themselves, which includes some crazy things that Aaron can probably tell you about.
It's going to be crazy. No, I didn't just come out and find it. It's going to be kind of variety show-ish, and they're going to house band playing behind them. And
yeah,
everybody's
there's
going to
be a band
theme
at the
song.
Library.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
That starts at 6 tonight.
Right. We'll have some food out by 5, and so anytime after that,
cool.
Stop on through and check out what's going to be happening at the library out at the Valley tonight. And then tomorrow we'll also be a part of the day, like Aaron said. as we were talking about it, I was like, gosh, it sounds like so much fun, but, you know, it's hard for us to have a table at something that might cost money for people to get into because we're the library and it's got to be free. And what would we need to do to make it free? And Pat kind of looked at me. They both looked at me, and we talked about it for quite a while. And I said, well, I think that could work. And so
like, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
What could we do to make it free?
So the Friends of the Juneau Public Libraries, which provides our library with all of the funding that we use to do all of our programming. The city, of course, pays my salary and pays the staff salaries. But all of the money for programming, whether it's, you know, stuff that we buy to give away for the kids in the summer reading program, or whether it's, you know, food that we have at events, whether it's whatever, it's all from the Friends. So the Friends is just an amazing organization. So they'll have a table there with some books from the amazing bookstore that you can buy, and you can also buy some summer reading T-shirts and bags and become a member of the Friends of the Juneau Public Libraries. And then we'll have a table as well, this public library, and we'll have books for checkout. So bring your library card, because we can only do it the old school way with the pen and a piece of paper, and we write down your number and give you a book and say, bring it back when you're
right.
done.
The old honor system. Yeah, it's back.
Yep. And so we'll let you take home two books. We've got like a whole stack of brand new graphic stuff that's just come into the library, as well as a lot of our graphic novel collection from all the libraries. So it's going to be a great time tomorrow and tonight as well. So we're excited to be a part of it.
And Katie, let's turn to you. First of all, where are you from?
I'm from Toronto, Canada.
Okay.
So I just came in yesterday.
All right. Well, that's exciting. And you are an artist.
I am.
And tell me a little bit about the work you do. You have a professional side, but it's also art related.
Yes, yes. I work full time as a storyboard artist in animation. I've been doing it for about 10 years now, but the thing I'm most passionate about is comics, so that's where shows like this are amazing to come out. And
there's a relationship there between a storyboard and
absolutely.
Comics, obviously.
It's all the visual storytelling, and I find both help feed off one another. I definitely get my speed from doing animation that can go into comics as well. You get to storytell and draw all day, which I love, which is fantastic.
So just to start on that's a fascinating career to have. So just to talk about that, storyboarding, is that that's sort of for like a motion picture company kind of thing?
It's mostly for a TV. So like a lot of shows I worked on out of Canada, shows like Wildcrats, which is like teaching kids about animals, things like Fairly Odd Parents, which is a lot of fun. I used to watch it as a kid, too. So it's just a lot of fun to get to do stuff that, you know, I enjoy as a kid and I can enjoy now.
And then you do your own comics. So do you self-publish?
I do. I do come from the self-publishing side. So I'm working on a series called Silly Kingdom, which is like the daily misadventures of a magical kingdom. And my brother writes, I draw. So it's very much a sibling collaboration, which is fun.
That's very cool.
Yeah, so I'll be here with those. And I love it. Every time I get free time.
How'd you hear about it?
Mostly social media. We're all over the Twitter and the Facebook, and I saw a bunch of my friends were going, and like, again, I've been internet stalking Pat for a while, so I'm like, oh, maybe we can.
I love the Canadian language, the Twitter and the Facebook. I love that. There's something elegant and formal about that. I love listening to Canadian speak. That's really fun that you just sort of figured it out on social media and decided to make the trip. I mean, it's not a direct flight, right?
About 12 hours just roundabout getting here. But it's gorgeous. I mean, today is so sunny and beautiful. I've spent the whole morning wandering around town.
That's great. Yeah, and it was a surprise sunny beautiful day too.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't supposed to be so great today, but it turned out fantastic.
Katie's actually part of a artist retreat thing that's happening later in this weekend, and that's not something that's still available to everybody, but that's part of what drew a lot of people in, is we're taking all these amazing artists and we're taking them out to the Methodist camp, and it's going to be a hoot out there too. But
that's really sold out, unfortunately. Not enough room. Of course, there was very limited room to begin with,
but it's not a very big camp, and there's we want to make it a very hands-on experience, but it's going to be really fun out there, and that's part of what I think drew such amazing artists in.
Very cool.
But we're benefiting it from tomorrow. I mean, tomorrow's going to be great.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the amazing artists. Katie is one of them, but there's a bunch of others. So let's hit maybe some of the highlights of people that maybe folks have heard of, that sort of thing, people that you're particularly excited about getting to hang out with and all that.
Kazu Kibuishi came to town last year, so people are probably familiar with him, but he does the Amulet books, and They are
gorgeous,
best sellers, and yeah, they're really popular and well known, and they're awesome.
You're a little verklempt right now, a little starstruck.
He also did the Harry Potter series. He did the artwork for the new release.
The 25th anniversary ones, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. You know, he's a heavy hitter, for sure. Yeah, yeah, right.
And Reyna is another very heavy hitter. If you look at the graphic novel bestseller list right now, I think she's got like 5 of the top 10, starting off with the top 3, I think. So she's a big get.
Very cool.
And she's, yeah.
And John Clausen. For the library world, that's huge, too, you know.
A couple of Caldecott winners. And
right, yeah.
Yeah, he's great. He's going to be doing some – he's going to read some of his kids' books over at the reading room at the Imagination Station. That'll be really fun.
An interesting part of this Comic-Con that we were just kind of talking about a little bit, the as it grew, there's one track or one focus that's pretty kid-oriented. Right.
Right?
And so
yeah.
How did that kind of come about and what can kids or parents expect to go get kids involved in?
That's a good question. I mean, like, we've always kind of, like, kids have, like, a fun, and they haven't really stopped drawing yet. I think, like, everybody kind of draws while you're young, and it's just kind of like a thing that you do. And then at some point you get a little bit embarrassed by your drawing or, like, something else, and it stops. And we want to get them before they lose that creativity, that fun, and just kind of, like, foster it and make it keep it going. I think that's what's really fun about art. And we've kind of been doing that, and we've done that with friends of the library. We've brought some people to town before, and that's kind of where a lot of these people are. They're coming back again because they've supported that, and they think that's a great thing too. And,
yeah, that's cool for the library, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
totally.
That's a big, mm-hmm. you know, obviously a huge focus of what public libraries
right.
is all about as a resource.
Yeah, and bringing
for kids.
this box full of just we have a bookmark contest every year. And it's, you know, drawings, and they're just, they go back to, like, you know, the 80s. And so I'm bringing the box, and, you know, so people can just, like, thumb through those and take one from, that they like.
Remember the good old days.
And remember the good old days when you were a kid and you drew
right.
something and you won a prize for it.
Right,
you know?
And get your own bookmark back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very cool. And then let's talk about some of the other tracks, some of the other fun things that are happening. Like, when Pat was here last week and I was talking to him, I know that Ty's coming with a bunch of Legos.
Yeah, we're going to have a Lego competition thing on Saturday. And there's going to be Val Snyder from Brown Boot Company. She's going to have a make-your-own costume, like, set up there. And
Platypus Gaming.
Platypus Games will have games you can play in the background. Yeah, if you want to sit down and really battle it out with somebody for a while, there'll be options for that.
And then let's
be teaching games and
yeah.
stuff, too, so you can kind of learn some new stuff. That'll be fun.
And, Katie, have you gone to a lot of comic conventions participated in them?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, cool. So let's talk about costumes.
Oh, okay.
Cosplay, yeah.
Yeah, cosplay's amazing. The talent is so good.
So what are we hoping for?
Oh.
From the folks attending, as far as the cosplay goes.
Gosh, just someone that really just owns whatever character they're dressing up as and having fun with it. I love that.
That's really the beauty of cosplay. Is it's people with a passion for a storyline or a character, and they want to express it, and they find other people that have that passion too, because they'll like recognize who they are, and it'll be. That moment is so great.
Right, because you think you're the only weirdo who's into
right.
that thing, right?
And turns out there's a whole bunch
of weirdos.
Exactly.
And just the passion they put into it. Like, the best ones are always self-made. Like, it's at a Comic-Con, the vast majority of them will be self-made. It's not like someone goes out and buys a Batman costume and one of those, like, muscled, like, things. I mean, there's a few of those people, too. But
yeah.
Although the 501st is probably some of the most amazing costumes
right.
with the 501st Legion here in Juneau. And I think there might be a little appearance of some folks tomorrow from there.
Excellent.
So we had them come
out
to the library.
Yeah, those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we had them come out to the library one day for a program. And just having Darth Vader and Stormtrooper in the library was just so
But they spend a lot of time on their costumes,
yeah.
too. It's not that,
yeah.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
very professional.
Absolutely. Oh,
yeah.
They
mm-hmm.
look amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they look like right off the movie set.
Right.
Definitely. Yeah, and not store-bought.
No.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, not
no.
just, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
they do a lot of molding with the helmets and things.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine's in that, too.
Do you do it?
I don't, but I love seeing it.
Yeah. We've done it a little bit. A couple of Halloweens.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just saying Green Arrow.
Green Arrow, that's right.
Well, I can tell you, my costume tomorrow is a little bit inspired by Prince as well.
Oh, you were wearing the purple right now, so it's wonderful to see you in the purple here.
But,
and
yeah, tomorrow I'm hoping that people will remember that Prince did the original Batman movie soundtrack.
Oh, absolutely.
And
just
one
as
of the
Joker often.
Yeah. I, however, am going to portray one of the women from that series. So I'll have my camera and I'll be my little nosy, cute hat wearing self and see what people can figure out.
Okay, very good. It's going to be fun.
Do some research now. You'll figure it out.
Any other details people need to know about what's going on as far as, so tonight is the 6 o'clock at the Valley Library.
Right.
That's kind of the kickoff event. There was a really fun mini concert that happened last night at Kindred Post, which is very cool. And then starting tomorrow at what time?
Starting tomorrow at 10 o'clock is when the doors open. And then the other events around downtown Juneau start at 11. So, yeah, go in and make sure you know what's going on when and where and take it from there.
Have a blast. Well,
yeah,
right?
It's going to be great. We're gonna take over all downtown, basically, I think is what's going to happen. It's going to be so much fun.
The Jack itself is going to kind of look like a bunch of artists like yourself. You'll have tables out. You'll have your stuff there. It's obviously for
showing
sale,
a lot of art.
Right?
Yeah,
obviously,
sure.
That's a big part of it is you want to sell your
people selling.
Art.
There'll be people like that are just displaying and stuff, too. There'll be like a lot of different things going on. We'll have a lot of student events and stuff going on there, too. And yeah.
And just it must be gratifying just to meet people who come up and get inspired by your work and want to meet you and talk to you. Like,
oh,
in some ways, you must, especially I'd say younger people, you must be one of their heroes in a way, right? Because you're doing the thing.
It's lovely.
Yeah, right.
It reminds me of being a kid where I would go up to my art heroes and shyly ask them to sign my book, and someday I want to draw comics, and then just persevering over the years, like I'm happy to be in the place where I can do that now. And I do meet very young readers that'll come up and, oh, I can't wait to draw and make comics someday. I'm like, yeah, just draw. You just got to keep at it.
Don't stop.
If you love it. Do not stop.
And the thing that's so wonderful about everything that's been happening with comics, especially, this just seems like a proliferation of, especially self-publishing and all that stuff and the ability to get it, is that, you know, every style has legitimacy, right? As long as you own that style. It's just like what you were saying about costumes. So there isn't one way of drawing or one, you know, it's no longer that thing of you've got to learn how to do this.
Oh, exactly. And that's kind of the great thing about the net, too, is there's no nothing blocking you from making the comics you want to make. You can make them and just put them on a blog. You can make the kind of comics you want to read if you don't see them. And that's what I did. I wanted to make comics that I, as a young girl, wanted to read, and now I can make those. And that's anyone can do that, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's no longer like I have to submit it to the New Yorker.
Exactly. You don't have to go through it.
Yeah, it's either Marvel or, newspaper. Yeah.
They aren't the only games in town.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, speaking of games in town, there's going to be plenty of it. It's happening tomorrow. We're still calling it Minicom? It doesn't seem mini to me, man. It seems pretty big.
All right.
But I don't know. It's pretty cool.
It's one day.
It's the inaugural
first
ever comic convention
Start humble. That's fine. It's Minicom. All right. Minicom. Juno's little comic con.
Don't miss out. I mean, if you don't come tomorrow, you'll miss it. So
yeah, it's just a web.
It's a one-day thing. So that's part of what's mini about it.
Yeah.
You can make it more than mini by coming tonight to the library and tomorrow to the Jack.
Yeah, come out and meet him tonight and then tomorrow get them their signatures and stuff.
Well, have a blast. It's great to meet you, Katie.
Thank you,
and have a great time. And thanks, you guys, for coming in. That's Aaron Suring from Alaska Robotics, and we should mention Pat Race, Aaron Suring, Lou Logan, Jamie Karnick, the whole Alaska Robotics crew, Sarah Asper-Smith, Marion Call, all the people that kind of work in that office are the ones that were the absolute start of this and the inspiration for making it happen. So thanks for bringing something really cool to Juneau.
Thanks for being supportive enough to make it happen. I mean, that's not just us.
All right, cool.
So many sponsors have done so much along the way, and thank you.
All right, well, speaking of all this creativity and writing, here's Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 22nd of April, 2016. It's the birthday of the man who gave us the novel Tom Jones, Henry Fielding, born Sharpham, England, 1707, best known in his own day as the playwright, author of many satiric plays that got him in trouble with the authorities. It's the birthday of the novelist who said, "I don't fish, cook, dance, endorse books, sign declarations, eat oysters, get drunk, go to analysis, or take part in any demonstrations. I'm a mild old gentleman, very kind. Vladimir Nabokov said that, who was born on this day in 1899 in St. Petersburg, Russia. Born to an aristocratic family, his father was a lawyer. He grew up trilingual, fluent in English, French, and Russian. Family fled Russia during the Bolshevik Revolution, settled in England. Nabokov studied at Cambridge. Initially, he studied zoology. He was so interested in butterflies, but then he studied French and Russian literature and became a writer. Arrived in America in 1940. He taught at Wellesley and Cornell, became a U.S. citizen. He said, "I'm as American as April in Arizona." He and his wife never bought a house. They preferred to be renters. Nabokov wrote standing up at a lectern, making notes on index cards, which he then arranged in order, gave to his wife, Vera, who typed them out into manuscript form. She was also his bookkeeper, his agent, his manager. He said to his wife, "You turn my life into something light, amazing, rainbowed." He wrote many novels in the 40s, never earned more than a few $100 for them, until Lolita came out in 1955. The success of it made it possible for Nabokov to quit teaching and to move with his wife Vera to Switzerland, where they lived in a hotel. And it's the birthday of the poet Louise Glück, born New York City in 1943. Her first collection of poetry, Firstborn, came out in 1968. She was just 25, won the Pulitzer Prize for her collection, The Wild Iris. Louise Glück, who said, "I think the question of who's going to be a writer has more to do with intelligence and hunger than talent. There's a ton of talent, and it takes you only so far. People with toughness and the willingness to start over, combined with intense need, those are the people who can become anything." Here's a poem for today by Hal Sirovitz, entitled "The Sound of a Tree Falling." "Your mother complains about my snoring," Father said, "but she forgets to mention the times I was awakened in the middle of the night by the sound celery makes when you bite into it. At first I thought it was a tree falling on the house. I almost jumped out of bed, but when I saw her munching on celery, I knew I was safe. Crackers are just as loud. They sound like a chainsaw cutting wood. My snoring is a form of self-defense. It drowns out the other noises." The Sound of a Tree Falling, a poem by Hal Sirovitz from Father Said, published by Soft Skull Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by TIAA, whether it's investing, advice, banking, or retirement, TIAA is committed to helping those who do good do well. Learn more at TIAA.org. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for this station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas. Treadwell Ice Arena is open 7 days a week, offering drop-in open skating, hockey, and a variety of special events. We are the proud home of the Crimson Bears hockey team, youth, adult, hockey, and figure skating programs. More information at juno.org/parksrec/ice rink or call 586-0410. We'll be right back.
have another purple guest here, Katie Bosler from UAS. Katie, you're bedecked in purple, as is befitting of a tribute to the great Prince.
I'm embodying Purple Rain.
Yeah.
Don't have the raspberry beret,
well,
but you know you can't
not
have
a
it
lot
all.
Of, not a lot of secondhand stores around, you know.
Right.
Katie, you're here to talk to us about lots of different stuff. As always, there's so much going on at UAS, and we want to talk about registration. We want to talk about a couple of cool things, too. Also, Board of Regents recognizing some community members in Southeast Alaska. So what do you want to talk about first?
Well, let's. Why don't we just start out with registration?
Okay.
We just
get the business out of the way here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just, folks, I want to point you to ads that you've probably seen in the Capital City Weekly and the Empire this week, and those will tell you that open registration for the spring 2016 semester is on. And so, what you want to do to find out what classes you might want to take is go to our website. uas.alaska.edu, and you can just we have a really cool little search within the site. You can, you know, punch in schedule or registration, or just slash schedule with the website address.
Mm-hmm.
It's right there. And you'll see spring semester, and you can go into our little search area there and find which classes you might want to enroll in. And, you know, I always kind of say, whether you're chipping away at that degree or you're a degree program student and you just needed to get this done, now is the time to register because those classes fill up, and you want to know what you're doing in the fall,
right?
So that's the fall 2016 registration, and also, of course, for students who are graduating from high school, thinking about where do they want to go, maybe their plan to go somewhere else is fallen through, think about UAS. Look into UAS because, right now, Andy, I'm focusing on collecting information on outstanding graduates. We're putting together a website. We do that every year.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see and hear radio and print ads coming out in the next, few weeks, focusing on some local students, people like Eric Fagerstrom, who graduated 2011 from JDHS, decided he wanted to be a dentist, and we don't, of course, have a dental school. We do have a Bachelor of Science in Biology. So he's our outstanding graduate in biology this year, 2016. And, he told me, I went down south. I tried going to school in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
My professor didn't know who I was.
No, that's such a common experience.
Yeah, yeah. And here I'm out, in the field doing really interesting research on seaweed with my professor and tutoring my fellow students in the learning lab. And, you have really rich, you can have a really rich experience at UAS.
Absolutely,
So registration for fall 2016 is on again. Whether you're a full-time student or part-time or just taking one class at a time, go to our website, uas.alaska.edu/schedule, and check it out. Also, if you want to get some more information, you're kind of wondering about this, I don't know, where do I start? We have academic advisors on hand, and you can always give the Student Resource Center a call, 796-6000, and you can make an appointment with one of those advisors. And if you just want more information about the schedule or the registration process, you would call our main desk, and that is 796-6100.
Are there trends that are happening right now with registration at UAS? Are there more students coming right out of high school getting into UAS? Is that something that's been happening more? Are there more continuing ed people?
Well,
or?
Still our average age, is I think somewhere in the late 20s. But we do have that gorgeous residence hall, and students even who live here in Juneau it's our freshman residence hall.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best view in town, and pretty cozy accommodations, pretty gorgeous, state-of-the-art stuff, looking out on the lake and the ice field.
Yeah, that transition of the Bill Ray Center is no longer the UAS, and that was kind of sold off in order to help
build the registry,
build
the residence
hall.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a brand
right.
new, beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's all on-campus stuff, but also, more than 50% of our credit hours are online classes. So we have a lot of online options with instructors throughout Southeast Alaska.
I guess that's obviously a growing trend.
People
are just expecting that. That's something that's just an expectation.
Yeah, especially working people, you know, who want to get ahead or change careers, and they're working so they can, you know, go to school online.
Are there program areas that people might not know about that UAS has got that maybe are either new or just underutilized, or maybe just when people think UAS, you know, I think about the kind of government programs, things like that, that have been for so long such a longstanding degree program.
Well, you know, I mean, I think you think also of our stalwart environmental science and marine biology because of our environment. But, you know, we have a very strong social science department, anthropology. Clinkett, of course, you know, it's incredible. You know, our other outstanding graduate I've been working with this week, Stephanie Tripp, says, you know, this is the only place in the world I can, like, you know, get a degree emphasizing Clinkett, the Clinkett language, and that's what I want to do, you know, for my community, my culture, and where I come from. So that's pretty cool.
Cool.
Not
to throw a curveball at you, but let me just quickly ask, is there any update on Forrest?
Yes.
Can we?
As a matter of fact, Forrest has been, I think the terminology is upgraded to fair condition.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
news.
He started the week in critical condition, and now he's gone from serious and to fair. So he is definitely improving.
Great,
and
on the mend. That's incredibly good news.
Yeah, and oh my gosh, just such an outpouring of support from the UAS and the Juneau and Southeast Alaskan community. I think he's feeling pretty loved. And,
well, he was already loved, and is such a great kind of pillar of the outdoor studies program to begin with. And I've interviewed him in this studio many times, you know, and so it's wonderful to hear that he's getting better. That's great news.
Yes, good. Thank you.
So the next thing you wanted to talk about was this this recognition that happened for a bunch of community members in Juneau, Ketchikan, and Sitka.
Yes. So what's happening is we're gearing up for commencement. If we didn't have enough going on already, a week from this Sunday is the Juneau commencement, Sunday the 1st of May. Our chancellor, as a matter of fact, a week from now will just be on his commencement road trip, where he starts Friday in Sitka or Ketchikan, and then he's in Sitka or Ketchikan the next day, Saturday, and then in Juneau on Sunday. So we have some honorary doctorates that we're really excited about. And if you look in your Capital City Weekly this week, you'll see a full-page ad, and it was also in the half page in the Sunday Empire. So we are very honored to honor Edward Thomas and Sandra Lane as honorary doctorates this year. And, of course, you know, Thomas is a past president of the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes. That was for 20 years.
Yeah.
Or it was 30 years.
Yeah. And Sandra's
30 years. 1984 to 2014. Wow. You know, a member of the Alaska Federation of Natives. He was the secretary to the National Congress of American Indians. And he played a really key role, Andy, in establishing legally binding compacts between Alaska Native tribes and the federal government. So huge contributions from Edward Thomas, and you know, he will be our honorary doctorate at the Juneau commencement ceremonies on the 1st of May.
And then Sandra's got such an amazing entrepreneurial history.
Oh my gosh.
Toku Smokeries, of course, as everyone knows, and then also all of these great fish oil products that he's been doing for so long. It's just he's just got such a creative mind for business and for incorporating these natural products of Southeast Alaska into products that people want to have.
Yeah, and you know, who knew? When one of my son's friends was, you know, in college, one of his summer jobs, like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm making fish oil tablets with Sandra. I'm like, what? Fish oil tablets?
Right.
And I think they're sold at Costco now.
Yeah,
it's a huge thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, he's currently co-owner of Trident Seafood, but he, again, you know, more than 30 years, been an entrepreneur. He's real out, but he also, you know, is a real efficient, I guess you'd say, an environmentalist in a way. He's found ways to prevent fish carcass waste and help to protect our waters by finding ways to use this fish oil and protein. Yeah. So
those
cool.
are the doctorates,
those
the honorary doctorates.
Yeah.
And then what are the other kind of recognitions?
Well, our Meritorious Service Award is going to Juneau Community Volunteer Peter Freer. And then in Sitka and Ketchikan, our arts advocate Jeff Budd in Sitka and Ketchikan, it's a fishing industry innovator, Larry Painter. So, you know, Peter Freer, oh, my gosh. I mean, what has he not done?
Yeah, where do you start with Peter? I mean, it's everything.
Yeah. I mean, I think...
And just such a force for good.
Yes.
You know, and everything he does, it's really, really amazing. I don't know Jeff or Larry. I know Juno people more than...
Yeah, well, I can tell you a little bit about you know, both of them. And then get back to Peter. Jeff, he's actually the owner of Sitka Bike and Hike. And he's the director of the Greater Sitka Arts Council. So he's, you know, helped transition that arts council from this all-volunteer organization to an established part of the community, providing, you know, all kinds of events, wearable arts, monthly grinds, which I like to see that happen here, community theater. And then Larry Painter, he played a major role in helping to sustain Alaska seafood from Southeast Alaska. And... he's made possible, you know, he had some role in the launching of the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute.
Very cool, yeah.
And then Peter, on the assembly from 83 to 87, and then, of course, an interim kind of appointed number 2011, but over 40 years, you know, served the public through the State of Alaska Municipal League. He's an actor, board member, administrator, technician with Perseverance Theater in the Rough. Also on the boards of it. I don't know if I have all of them listed.
Right. Junior Arts and Humanities Council, yeah. I know, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
Youth Services, yep. Glacier Swim Club, Montessori Center. So that's one of the kind of nice
things. I guess he's deserving.
You think?
I guess. All right. So when's this all happening?
This is all happening at 2 o'clock out at our rec center. So for those of you who aren't familiar, if you go out...
On May 1st, right? Sunday,
May
1st. Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So, if you go out, you know, to Ock Bay, you know, we have the roundabout. Get to your roundabout. You go up the hill a little bit there and take a left instead of... If you can take a right, you go to the main campus, which is where you'd park. And then you'll get on a bus and go... across the road, the back of the road. This is when you can, the one day of the year you can take a tour bus across the back loop road from the UIS to the rec center. Yeah. And
the rec center is an awesome facility.
Yeah.
I mean, that's such a great spot, too. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's always, you know, I think kind of uplifting to attend these events. And next week,
it's all about people who are, it's all about accomplishment, about people
mm-hmm.
who've gone out of their way to help communities,
mm-hmm.
about
mm-hmm.
people who've innovated, and you're recognizing often a lifetime's worth of work
mm-hmm.
and achievement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very.
And I like that the door is open at UAS. You know, I mean, just thinking about a peer of mine who's actually my age, and we have featured him in an ad in the last couple of weeks, Steve Handy. Who, you know, was a legislative intern a couple of years ago. Now he works as an aide in the legislature. He is getting his first bachelor's degree. And I'm really excited for him.
Yeah.
He's one of our many, many graduates.
Yeah, very
so
cool.
So next week, I think we'll have someone else from the university who can tell you more about you know, the blanks I haven't filled in about commencement. But we're very much looking forward to it, and we just want the public to know that put on your calendar. You're invited.
Yeah, great. Well, Katie, thanks so much for updating us on just a few of the things going on at UAS. There's always so much happening there.
Such
a great institution.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, 'tis the season, so if you want to know more about what's going on, because I'm sure I'm missing something, just go to our calendar, and that can be linked right from the Juno page of our website.
All right, great. Well, coming up next, we're going to hear Bird Note, but Katie Bosler from UAS, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Andy.
All right, and keep wearing purple. I know. Yeah.
Boo-hoo.
Well, boo-hoo, but here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. If this week's bright full moon pulls you outside, pause for a moment and listen. You just might hear nighttime migrating songbirds. Avid birdwatchers, particularly on the East Coast, use binoculars or telescopes to observe flocks flying across the face of the moon. A fascinating sight. The phenomenon is less easily experienced on the West Coast. Still, you may hear soft chirps floating down from the heavens. Most migrating songbirds, including warblers, thrushes, finches, and sparrows, prefer to fly under cover of darkness. There are several possible reasons. Fewer songbird predators are out at night, making for safer flight. The migrating birds use daylight hours to stop and feed along the way, or rest in protected spots. Evening air is cooler, more dense, making it easier for birds to generate lift. However, scientists believe that the main reason songbirds migrate at night is the stars. Birds use the stars to help orient their northward journey. This week, wander out into the dark of evening and enjoy the bright glow of the full moon. Carefully watch the face of the moon and imagine millions of songbirds heading north. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon on this surprise sunny Friday. I hope you guys are having a good afternoon. And Katrina Pearson is joining me now in the studio. Katrina, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to talk a little bit about a few different things, but we wanted to first of all cover the Northwards Symposium. So tell me, I don't know anything about it. You were just saying, do you know anything about it? I was like, no, let's talk about it on the air.
Okay,
so
perfect.
Let's do it.
The Northward Symposium, it's a writer's symposium up in Skagway, and I got involved with it a few years ago as a business sponsor and a volunteer. And so it's sort of...
I do know about it now that you mentioned that. Clint has told me about it.
Yes.
And has been there.
He's been there several times.
Right,
okay. Exactly. So
it's a blast, right? First and foremost, it's super fun.
It is, yeah.
Right.
We don't talk about all the things that happen in Northwards, but yes, it is. But primarily what I'm going to talk about today is, the faculty and the keynote and what, you know, registrants get out of Northwards,
which is
pretty great. So so the dates this year are May 25th through 28th up in Skagway. And every year we have a keynote, and that keynote writer speaker is supported by Alaskan faculty, which are writers from around the state. So this year our keynote is Brian Doyle, and he's a writer from Oregon. And he has a new book coming out called Chicago, which I have not yet read, but I can tell you Mink River is one of my favorite novels of all time. And I heard him speak years ago at a trade show down south, and he is terrific. And he has this wonderful way of writing about quirky sort of small town life, which is what Mink River was, this little logging town on the Oregon coast. And he's a wonderful presenter. And my guess is he's equally as wonderful, he's equally wonderful as a teacher, I'm sure. So he is going to be our keynote. And then we have Alaskan faculty. And this year, our Alaska writers are Heather Lendy, Eowyn Ivy, who wrote The Snow Child, Kim Hecox, Emily Wall, and Lynn Schooler. So probably all
wow,
names, you
heavy
know.
Heavy hitters.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, so... They will, all of these people will be participating, and they'll be on panel discussions, and we'll be hosting writing workshops. And I've got a couple of just titles from some of our planned panels, which will kind of give folks a flavor of what happens. One of the panels was called Published from Your Brain to the Adoring Readers. One is called Cold Copy, What Makes Editors Cringe, Shriek, and Fall in Love. One is Enough with the Extra Tufts, Discovering Alaska Beyond Reality TV. So they're all very, very
we can all get
interesting.
Behind that one.
Yeah. Yes, we can. So I think one of the great things about Northwards is that it's not a huge symposium, right? We cap registration at 50, and that really allows aspiring writers to have more sort of intimate time, you know, with the published, you know, the panels are kind of small, but there's a lot of collaboration and everyone gets to know everybody, which is great. I mean, you can, and there are consultations, excuse me, where you sign up for a half hour of time with writers. Like you can sign up for a half an hour of time with Brian Doyle. And you can ask him whatever you want.
That's cool.
Right? Or
yeah.
You can hang out with Heather Lendy for a half an
right,
hour. And,
right.
You know. So I think that's there's just kind of a terrific camaraderie about it. And there's a lot of fun and some hijinks that do happen that I'm sure Clint might have, you know, may have touched on.
Now, where does it take place?
The symposium itself is in Skagway, around Skagway.
Oh, okay.
Right?
So different locations around Skagway. Okay.
Yeah. So we have... you know, beyond the panel discussions and the writing workshops, let's see, we have an opening reception. You know, you arrive on Wednesday, we have an opening reception, and then we really sort of dig in on Thursday. So some of the things are at the A and B Hall. There's some readings at the Presbyterian Church, and they're just in different places around Skagway. There are book signings that happen, faculty readings. A couple of the sort of social events that we have. One is a campfire and a cookout out in Dai at Alderworks, which is Jeff Brady's. It's an artist in residency, writer in residency spot out there on a homestead property, and it's beautiful. And we have, you know, we have this big cookout and a fire and a band, but you know, a band playing from the porch of one of the cabins.
Nice.
It's really terrific.
Yeah.
And then we also have a train ride and trail ride. So you get on the train and it drops you off and then you can, you know, hang out and write, which is very cool.
Yeah.
Then we also have a closing banquet, right? So, and that's the closing banquet is where Brian Doyle will speak. You know, he'll give his keynote and it's always lovely and it's wonderful. And there's free time in Skagway too, so you can enjoy all the other things that Skagway has to offer. And Skagway is such a cool setting, you know, it's really well attended, and the price. I'm going to actually say the price because I think it's inexpensive for what you get.
Definitely say the price.
$375.
And that's for how many days to total is it? It's
well,
3 days
it's,
total, sort of.
It's sort of 3 days total,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
So you have to get your lodging and your transportation, and there are links on our website about that. But you get some of the meals, you know,
mm-hmm.
and some of these other things, and some of these great venues, and sort of these, you know, really kind of wonderful events. And then the instruction from all the authors is worth far more.
What sort of things that when you think back on symposiums
mm-hmm.
that you've attended, what are some of the things that you've taken away that you feel like, oh, I remember that was something that I got out of that one symposium or talking to that one author?
That's interesting that you would ask me that. I was worried that you were going to ask me that because I'm not a writer.
Oh, okay.
But, however, in my professional life, I work with a lot of artists and authors in the work that I do. And so when I'm there and I'm kind of volunteering and I'm just helping, I try to sit in on panels just to hear some of, you know, the creative discussion. And I always, you know, I find that I always get something out of it. I always get this little... just this something, this little kernel of,
mm-hmm.
you know, and some of, you know, one of the things that I've gotten out of it, and I think one of the most interesting things is to hear about other people's sort of creative disciplines, you know, like do they write every day, you know, how do they foster their own creative,
mm-hmm.
their own creativity? And so, and some of those things I can talk about with the people that I work with, you know, or for me, most of my business is marketing. Right. So a lot of that stuff kind of carries through, you know, how to talk about yourself and how to, you know, promote work and that kind of thing. But
that's interesting to think about because writing is such a solitary, you know, endeavor.
Right.
And then it just seems like this is creating this opportunity to be able to talk about this solitary endeavor, but with other people who are having that same experience.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and I think what I was saying about the, you know, because it's kind of a smaller symposium, you're not, you know, you're interacting with people, like-minded people that they all want to, you know, they want to talk about these things. They want to figure out how to be better writers. They want to learn from the faculty. And you're not a face in a crowd at this. You know, you have big conferences where you're like one of 100.
And you're one of the people that runs up after the speech and you stand in line and all that stuff. Right.
Yeah. And this is, you know, everyone leaves knowing each other, you know.
It's really cool.
It is really, really cool.
Yeah.
So.
And then you were saying you had another kind of event or thing that you wanted to talk about as
well.
Oh,
well, so I do, actually.
Let's talk about it.
So one of my other businesses is a little publishing company called Shorefast Editions. And, well, one of the books that we published that you know about, Andy Klein, is Beers of the North. So we're just finishing the second edition, which is about to go to press, which we're excited about. And then we have some upcoming projects that I can mention, which we're also excited about. One is a reprint of Sherry Simpson's first book, The Way Winter Comes.
Oh, very cool.
If you've ever read that.
I've read Sherry's work, definitely. I don't know if I've read that one.
It's a collection of nonfiction essays about Alaska. Definitely not reality TV, like good, honest writing, funny. So we'll be publishing.
As she always is. I mean, she's such she's a wonderful, humorous, amazing mind of a writer.
So we'll be publishing that in the fall. And then we are starting a project with John Straley, which is a collection of haiku poetry, and it's going to be a four-volume set, each volume representing a season of the year. So the first one will be spring. We'll be out in spring.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we just wrapped up a project.
And what's John's role in that book? Is he working as an editor?
He's the poet.
He's the poet. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Wow. That's that's very cool.
Yeah.
Because I'm familiar with his other work, not his poetry. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah,
cool.
We're very excited about that. We're working
great
on that right now. And we just finished a book on Ed Ricketts, and we've talked about that a little bit on air. Jan Straley was the editor, and so this was kind of a collaborative book with an anthology, if you will, a collection of essays about Ed Ricketts, who was, like, if you ever read Cannery Row, and Doc was modeled after him a bit.
Okay.
Ed was a cohort of John Steinbeck's, and did a trip into Southeast Alaska in 1932, and he wrote a science paper about wave shock theory, which came out of that trip. So we published that paper in the book, which hadn't been published before, and John wrote an essay, Jan wrote an introduction, and then we had some contemporary science to back it up, and Nancy Ricketts, Ed's daughter, lives in Sitka today, and she wrote...
Oh, really? Still? Yeah, that's very... That lineage is still there.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. And so she wrote this essay about going out with her father and collecting specimens, right?
Yeah.
It's incredible. Huh. So those are some of the projects that we're working on. And Shorefast, we sponsor... we're a sponsor of Northwards, too. So
getting back to Northwards, let's talk about just how people can find out more about this, how they can sign up, those kinds of things.
Yeah, absolutely. So the best way would be to go to our website, which is, I'm actually just going to spell it out just so you get all the right letters. So it's nwwriters.com. So nwwriters.com.
Northwoods Writers Symposium is what I think that. Yes, okay,
yeah,
got it all.
So
okay.
Or you can call the Skagway Tourism Department, and that number, if people want to just make a phone call, is 907-983-2854.
And it's all happening May 25th to the 28th, and it's 300 and some?
300 and some, 375.
375 for what can probably be, I would think, for many people, a life-changing experience as far as how it can affect their writing, how they can talk about it, and to talk about it with people who are, you know, have so much experience and really prestige as far as their writing skills and reputation. Sounds like an amazing event.
Yes, it is, absolutely.
I want to go. Maybe I'll go.
You should go.
I could go.
You could go.
I could go. I don't know. Be awesome. I'd like to go. Well, once again, it's the Northwards Symposium. It's happening in Skagway, May 25th to the 28th. And Katrina Pearson, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about it.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thanks. And that's it for this Friday edition of A Juno Afternoon. Thanks to all my guests for coming in, and enjoy your weekend.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Our candidates are running for the nomination of the Republican Party. They're trying out for our team.
The head of the Republican National Committee calls for unity at the party's last gathering before the convention. It's Friday, April 22nd, and this is All Things Considered. I'm Kelly McEvers. Coming up, we'll hear about the RNC meeting and talk to our weekly political commentators about what could be a new version of Donald Trump. Also, pro-business groups in Missouri rally against a religious freedom law.
This can be a defining brand or defining image for your city. And how will that affect your ability to attract and retain talent?
Plus, one thing about climate change, it may actually mean better weather in some places, at least for now.
I live here in New York City, and on Christmas Day, we were all wearing shorts. So it was no Currier and Ives Christmas, but it was also pleasant.
Now news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. Authorities are investigating the execution-style shooting of eight people in rural Ohio. Police say they're searching for a suspect described as armed and dangerous. The shootings happened in four locations in Pike County and Appalachian Mountain region, about 80 miles east of Cincinnati. United Nations officials say 175 governments signed the so-called Paris Climate Agreement today in New York City. As NPR's Christopher Joyce reports, the agreement is designed to curb global warming.
The climate deal was negotiated last December in Paris. It's the most sweeping climate agreement ever. For the first time, both developed as well as developing countries have pledged to slow climate change. President Obama has promised to lower emissions of greenhouse gases in the U.S., by about one quarter below what they were in 2005. The deadline for that is 2025. China is the other biggest source of emissions. Their government says their emissions will peak in 2030 and then decline. The signings today are a formality. The agreement is expected to go into effect as soon as this fall, when enough governments submit official plans for emissions cuts. Christopher Joyce, NPR News.
An autopsy on Prince is complete, but the Midwest Medical Examiner's Office says it will be days or weeks before all the test results are back. The 57-year-old music icon died yesterday after being found unresponsive at his Paisley Park studio compound in Chanhassen in suburban Minneapolis. Carver County Sheriff Jim Olson says Prince was found in the elevator.
He certainly does have access to stairways. Paisley Park, again, is a big place, and I don't think it would be unusual for him to use the elevator. The staircases are pretty long.
He says there are no obvious signs of trauma to Prince's body. Officials say that body has been turned over to his family. Volkswagen will take an $18.3 billion hit to its 2015 earnings to cover the costs of its emissions scandal. As NPR's John Idsty reports, that's much more than the company had originally set aside to cover the costs of its cheating.
VW initially set aside about $7.6 billion to cover the damage. A deal it made Thursday with U.S. regulators will boost the cost. VW agreed to buy back or fix nearly 500,000 cars it sold in the U.S., plus give additional compensation to owners and pay fines for its wrongdoing. The cost of that deal is still unclear, but Kelley Blue Book says buying back the U.S. cars affected would cost $7 billion.